Welcome to the podcast of the First Presbyterian Church of Englewood, a community committed to live boldly, share boundlessly, grow community, and build God's world. Please visit us in person or at englewoodpres.org.
Friends, our second lesson today is taken from the Gospel according to Luke chapter 18, verses 1 through 8. Then Jesus told them about a parable about their need to pray always and not to lose heart. He said, in a certain city there was a judge who neither feared God nor had respect for people. In that city there was a widow who kept coming to him and saying, grant me justice against my opponent. For a while he refused, but later he said to himself, though I have no fear of God and no respect for anyone, yet because this widow keeps bothering me, I will grant her justice so that she may not wear me out by continually coming. And the Lord said, listen to what the unjust judge says. And will not God grant justice to his chosen ones who cry to him day and night? Will he delay long in helping them? I tell you, he will quickly grant justice to them. And yet, when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on earth? This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
Well, I think that there is a tendency in our faith to have a certain passivity that I don't think is warranted. For example, you know, I've always joked about my lack of fondness for what I call refrigerator magnet Christianity. You know, these are those little sayings that people have you put up on the refrigerator. And a lot of them call us to a very passive kind of understanding of faith. You know, statements like, let go and let God. Relax. God is in charge, okay? And there's a real passivity to it that is really not a part of our ancient tradition. The people listening to Jesus out of the Jewish tradition were not used to this kind of passivity in the way they would deal with their faith. I mean, one of the favorite stories that I have that I'm going to put a few verses up from is this story of Abraham arguing with God after God has come to Abraham and says, Abraham, I'm going to destroy this city called Sodom. I'm going to destroy it. And Abraham's like, I don't really like that plan, God. I'm not too crazy about it. And Abraham says to God, suppose there are 50 righteous within the city. Will you then sweep away the place and not forgive it for the 50 righteous who are in it? Then he starts to shame God. He goes, far be it from you to do such a thing, to slay the righteous with the wicked so that the righteous fare as the wicked. Far be that from you. I mean, now he's like throwing God's own reputation back in God's face. And then the Lord says, if I find at Sodom 50 righteous in the city, I will forgive the whole place for their sake. Okay, so he's got them there. And now Abraham really starts to negotiate. Suppose 5 of the 50 righteous are lacking. Will you destroy the whole city for lack of 5? And he said, I will not destroy it if I find 45 there. He keeps going, and finally he gets him down to 40, and then he gets him to 30, he gets him to 20, and then finally he says, oh, do not let the Lord be angry if I speak just once more. Suppose 10 are found there. He answered, for the sake of 10, I will not destroy it. And in Jewish tradition, there's a thing that holds that Abraham gave up too soon. All right? That, you know, that he should have gotten all the way down, because eventually Sodom is destroyed and one person, Lot, is saved, okay, and his family. And the argument is, you know what? You kind of had God on the run here. You should have kept going. You know, you should have kept going. You didn't give up. It is not a passive understanding of our relationship with God, but rather an understanding that we're to be active in seeking justice. And so Jesus, into that environment, into that tradition, tells this parable of a widow. And we understand in the scriptures that a widow is a symbol. Widows were oppressed. So widows are a very literal problem, okay? Because a widow has no person, no husband to take care of her. Women didn't have careers, and so she has no profession to fall back on. And then also, she's already been married before, and so the odds of a man wanting her as his wife go down. And so widows were literally victimized in society by their circumstances. But the use of a widow in biblical storytelling is that she is not, is that she is a stand-in for all of the persons in society who are oppressed. And so, for instance, when we're talking about people in our society, in our context, who are hurting, we often just throw out a word like homeless people. Like, think about homeless people. Remember homeless people, okay? We throw that out a lot, and yes, we understand the homeless literally exist and literally need help. But often in our discourse, we're using that example to talk about not just homeless people, but about all people who are suffering, all people who are mistreated, doing badly, suffering in some way in our society. And so the widow is that in the biblical storytelling tradition. So the widow then is everyone who's hurting today. So it's everyone who is victimized today. So it's everyone who is discriminated against today. That's our widow. And then Jesus says, because this widow keeps bothering me. Now here's what happens. Jesus often uses the example of flawed humans, of people with flawed motivations, as contrast for how God acts. Okay? And so he's saying, look, this judge, whom he calls an unjust judge, this judge who doesn't really care, he's not moved by the widow's plight, even he will grant justice. And so God often says things like, you know, even you who, you know, if you who are evil know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will God be? This is often what God says. God's basically saying, look, you have no idea, and yet you still can do some good. How much more good can God do? All right? So he often uses the example of the flawed human as contrast to how good God is. And he says, look, even such a judge would eventually grant justice to this widow because she's bothering him. Which, by the way, is really humorous imagery. So just so you understand that in the Greek, when it says that she's wearing him out and bothering him, she's literally beating on him. She's not pestering him. This isn't phone calls. This isn't like text messaging him all day and night, okay? The word implies that she's physically hitting him. Wear me out actually means to strike under the eye. She's giving him a black eye. Okay? So you imagine this widow who's going after him and literally banging on him. I always get this image of a small person with a purse just going up to him and just whacking him across the face with her purse until she gets justice. And so Jesus is saying, look, even this person who doesn't care will eventually give in if you keep going. If you keep going, justice will be granted, because God is more. So God will grant justice, because it says, will not God grant justice to his chosen ones? Okay? So here we have this judge. If you pester this judge who doesn't care about you enough, even that judge would grant you justice. How much more will God grant justice? Because God actually cares. God actually loves us. God actually chose us. How much more will God grant justice? Justice to us. Then he says, yet when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on earth? See, this is the crux of the passage. When the Son of Man comes into this unjust world, will he find people who have been persistent, who have persevered, who have continued to believe in the message? Or will he find people who have given up? Will he find people who have caved in to cynicism? Will he find people who no longer care about the people who are oppressed in our society? Who will no longer care about the folks who are homeless? Who will no longer care about folks who are being discriminated against? Who will no longer care about all of these horrible ills that we see in our society? And it is easy to get discouraged. It's easy to believe that things aren't going to get better. We see pictures out of Aleppo, right? We saw that little boy, Umran Dakhnish, sitting in the ambulance, covered in dust, covered in blood. And you think, this is not a just world. Five-year-old boys aren't supposed to grow up in circumstances like that. We see African Americans who are afraid for their lives. This is not right. You know, this is not right. This is not who we are as a people. This is not what we stand for. This week was the anniversary, 18 years since Matthew Shepard was left for dead just because of his sexuality. It's not right. It's not fair. It's not just. And what do we do about it? What do we do about it? Do we give up? Do we simply say, this is not going to be the way it is? Or this is a part, you know, or this is just okay? Even if not okay, that this is just something we accept, that we're just going to sit back and say, oh, let go, let God. No, it can't be. It can't be. We need to understand that this is not God's intention for how we are to live, for how we are to exist. And the story of our relationship with God from that time in Genesis till now has been about the stubbornness of humanity through our disobedience to deviate from the plan that God had for our lives. Sometimes we see horrible things happen in the world and we have a tendency to want to say things like, oh, don't worry, God has a plan. Well, that's true. God does have a plan. But those tragedies aren't a part of the plan. Those tragedies are deviations from the plan. The plan was for people to obey God and live forever. And that plan also sounds like the promise of eternity. What's the promise of eternity? It's going to be this place where we live together, love together, obey God together, and live forever. See, that's the actual plan. Everything else is a deviation from the plan. Tragedies aren't a part of the plan. They're deviations from the plan. And what Jesus is calling us to do is to be people who are convinced that God's plan is going to win. And to be people who are going to go out into the world and make a difference in helping God's plan happen. Because there's one simple little reality that yes, we believe Jesus is going to come back. But what's happening between now and then? All right? Between now and then, you have to remember, who are God's hands and feet? You are. We are. Between now and then, you are God's plan to build God's world. You're the plan. And you are either the instruments of deviation from the plan by sowing discord, by behaving selfishly, or you're the plan for fixing these things by bringing healing and bringing wholeness and bringing love and bringing community into the world. God's plan for now is you. God's plan for now is us. This is why this is one of our value statements, right? Build God's world. It's right there on the back, big letters so you don't forget. Because we need those things together in order to execute God's plan for the world, okay? Because we need the courage of living boldly. We need the resources that come from sharing boundlessly, of giving of ourselves. We need to grow community because we need to understand that we are more effective together than we are apart. And when you put all those things together of courage, of shared resources, of communal action, we start to fix the things that are wrong in the world. And when Jesus comes, how many of the parables are this question? When Jesus comes, Will he find you working or will he find you not? Will he find you helping to build this world that's a part of God's plan, or will he find you being someone who has given up on it, who has caved into cynicism, who has stopped believing that God wins in the end? This is a parable that was a little confusing. So confusing that in the very first verse, the writer had to tell you, this is a parable about not losing heart. All right, when the gospel writer has to tell you what it's about, then you know it's going to be confusing. It's like if I have to explain the punchline of a joke, there's a problem. So it wasn't that clear, but he made it clear. Don't lose heart. That's what this story is about. Don't lose heart when you see the picture of that little boy, when you see Umran's picture, which continues to be out there. Don't have it cause you to lose heart. Have it cause you to get moving. Have it cause you to be motivated to find that place, that niche, somewhere in the midst of all of the injustice, to fight one injustice. And then two. And then three. But start somewhere. Start now. Because we're the plan. We're the plan for God to get the world God intended moving. Amen.